If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Over hill and moor they come, marching, ambling, trudging, reward for their country walk in a glass at the moon underwater.
I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Oh, Dan, how are you, Dan?
I'm very well, thanks,
Danny,
mate.
Dan.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Very good. Very good. Just been doing some yoga, some recharge and refresh. Yeah.
You often do it behind the bar, don't you?
Yep. Yeah, people can wait up to half an hour to get served.
It's quite frustrating.
If I'm in a downward dog.
Yeah.
But that's that. If you want a flexible barman, that's what you've got to have in your,
exactly.
in your pubs. What have you been up to this week?
Well, I went to the virtual reality centre.
Oh, did you?
The correct realm, the CRVR. Yeah.
What did you?
Well, they've got a great thing where you can put the VR thing on and go and have a pint in the moon underwater. So I did that. Yeah, but you don't get real beer.
Right,
but,
so you just do what you do normally then.
Yeah.
But without the real beer.
Yeah, it's my favourite thing.
Right.
Coming to the moon underwater.
Quite bleak your life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really bleak.
Yeah. Yeah, is it?
I say that.
I think it's fun.
I say that, Dan, but I had a brilliant time at your book launch last night.
Did you?
It was really good, your book launch. Yeah, I had no idea you were a financial guru, to be honest. No idea. I've got a copy of it here. Your picture of you on the cover looks lovely.
Yeah.
Title, Unlimited Money, My 4 Steps to Becoming a Multimillionaire. Not read it yet, though. Can you just give us what the 4 steps are?
Oh, well, I mean, if you give it to you, then people aren't going to buy
it. It's said underneath on the cover, so they will buy it still. It just tells you 4 steps, really.
Yeah. Okay.
Step one.
Number one, look after the pennies and the pounds will take care of themselves.
Right.
Number two.
I've heard that one before, though.
Yeah.
You've got 4 chapters on that. That's cool. Okay.
Number two.
Yep.
Invest in as many, what are they called? Bitcoin, ETH type things as you can. All of them.
Yeah.
Chuck your money in all of them.
It's weird that you wrote so many ers in it, but that was on the cover of the book as well.
Yep.
So everything in Bitcoin. Number three.
Number three, lottery. Make sure you buy your tickets every week.
National or postcode?
All lotteries.
Right.
Yeah. Number four.
Yeah.
Just bet on the GGs. Learn about that, bet on it,
Right.
There you go.
Underwhelming.
Yeah.
Very, very underwhelming. Sorry, Dan, I'd love to hear more about your final thing, but who is that stepping off the Correct Realm Heritage Railway and walking into the moon underwater? It's the comedian Jacob Hawley. Jacob, how are you? Welcome,
well.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me in the park.
How was your journey here today?
Stressful.
Was it?
Honestly, it was stressful, actually. It's that time of the year where... the local councils in London, this sounds like a mad conspiracy, but it is true. They've got money left over at the end of the financial year, because obviously April's coming up. And so they do all their road works now.
Yeah.
So the roads are a mess. But I got lucky with a tube. And I'm here, so I'm very happy.
My favourite thing about council in the first half of the year is the random, like, 2 months you'd have to pay council tax. You know what I mean?
Oh, I've done it. I've noticed that.
Yeah, they like, when you get your council tax bill, I'm sure this is everywhere. It's everywhere I've ever lived. Oh. I've lived in a few places.
No wonder they're all going bankrupt.
No, no, you get your council tax, but you only pay it for like 10 months or something. Right.
Oh, well, okay, nice.
I'm really losing confidence.
To give you an insight into my finances, so I basically pay the rent and most of the rent. This is quite personal for the start of the podcast.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend sends me a kind of chunk of money that's her contribution. But what's always considered within that chunk of money is that she's paying the council tax. Right. Now, if I'm just finding out now that in April and May, she's not paying anything.
She's kind of quiet.
I've got to have a difficult conversation when I get home. Because this has been going on for years. So I've got to find out what she's been having a good... How much is council tax a month?
Quite a lot.
200 plus, I'd say.
I've got some holidays to book this. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd check with her, because what she might be doing is taking the total bill for the year and dividing that by 12 and do it for you and then handling you the ups and downs.
You haven't met her, mate.
Right. Okay. So,
yeah, I've got conversations I've got to get home.
All right. Well, do check this, because the fact that none of you know about this makes me think I might be mental, but I'm pretty...
I don't want to gaslight you into doubting yourself. If I'm going by your knowledge, having listened to the conversation you just had at the start of the podcast about finances, if I'm going through your financial knowledge or my girlfriend's, how trustworthy she is, I'm trusting you, mate. And
amazing.
I think you're in business.
Thank you. I do have a degree in economics. That doesn't help you know whether or not you have to pay council tax.
Don't cover that, no.
You didn't get that in your 2-2 from the University of East Anglia.
Don't remember you doing a lot of economics.
Not loads. No. It was when we went, it was free.
Yeah.
And so I just went.
Yeah.
And just...
Just messed around on the radio just most of the time, didn't we?
I did the bare minimum to not be thrown off my course.
Yeah.
Well, and then at the end of it, I went to one job interview and they said, "Have you got a degree?" I went, "Yeah." And that's all I've used my degree for ever. 3 years. 3 years, everyone. Jacob, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Stevenage.
Okay.
Just above London in Hertfordshire.
Yeah. I've been to Stevenage once in 1996, seven, whenever, right around there. I stayed there at a friend's house when I went to see Oasis at Nebworth.
Oh, right. Yeah. So Nebworth is a big thing. I mean, it's funny, when there aren't concerts there, it's quite a bad park. Like, do you know what? There's Helter Skelters, actually. There are Helter Skelters. That's one thing I remember from my youth.
Plural.
Going to Nebworth. Yeah, yeah. Nice. Yeah, different levels, different difficulty. Difficulty? It's not really difficulty, is it?
It's harder to climb up, I suppose. Could be.
There you go. And there's more twists and turns in one, and I guess there is a slightly higher probability of getting stuck. But when I say Helter Skelters, you know, get in a sack and go down the slide. Real stuff. So that's sort of 98% of Nebworth. And then, of course, Liam Gallagher turns up once a decade. Oasis for yourself and the full entirety of their lineup. And Robbie Williams did Nebworth as well. That's kind of our cultural impact on the country, is that sort of 5 minutes down the road, we do host quite large gigs for alcoholics. You know, they're quite boozy gigs, those ones. Friends of mine went to the Liam Gallagher one. Was that a couple of years ago?
Two summers ago, maybe.
And I remember hearing that the trains on the way back into London broke down. And so, like, thousands of these, like, sort of like drunk dads just sort of marched back into London. They were, "Oh, fuck it, we'll walk instead." And apparently there were just hundreds of these blokes all in, like, sort of like vintage Adidas and Fred Perry, just like marching into London as if they're going to war. So yeah, that's Nebworth, which is, yeah, as good as we get in Steve.
Helter Skelters and the occasional gigs.
And the occasional gigs, big gigs.
I find, you've got a kid, Jacob, I find my kids going on Helter Skelters to be the scariest part, because they get to the top and they're basically stood by an enormous drop. Like, there's not that high railings on the side of a Helter Skelter.
No.
And I always look at that and I think, this is the most likely they are to die.
Yeah.
And I like to stand by the bit where they get on the Helter Skelter, almost like in the slips, ready in case they do.
You can be heroic dad and catch.
Yeah, but I mean, I've never seen it happen, but I do.
It's the closed slides that are most frightening, isn't it? You know, an open slide where you can watch them coming down, I don't mind so much. It's the closed slides where you can't see in.
Yeah.
And there is a brief 3 seconds where you think, like, the space-time continuum might break and they don't come out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you've seen them go in the top.
Yeah.
And you're sort of just trusting physics that they are going to come out the bottom. The most precious thing in your life just disappears for 3 seconds.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that are getting a thrill out of it. I had a funny... I went on holiday a couple of months ago to a sort of all-inclusive that was very much for families of young kids. And the kids' pool, sort of badly planned, they had a sort of kids' slide, you know, not... If I were to stand up, it's probably my height, you know, where... Which, you know, the sort of 2 and 3 year olds were going down. My daughter was enjoying that. But then there was the big helter skelters, the sort of adult slides were the same pool. And there was this nice family we met who, you know, very Essex family, and I quite like that. And they had this sort of like 10 minute sort of panic. We went, where's the kid? Where's the kid? Where's the kid? And they had like a 2 year old kid. And this kid, bless him, in proper daredevil, he'd been going down the kid's slide, but been eyeing up the adult one.
Right.
And in a split moment where parents weren't looking, had legged it up to the top.
Wow.
And just, you know, while they're panicking, their kid just like popped out and, you know, went up into the air. And it's like, it was like a cork coming out of a bottle. Just, and then plop. And then some German dad just caught him in the water. It's fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, it is amazing. What kids going down slides, man. We're never going to experience that. You know, the drop slides as well that they have. Again, we'll never know a thrill like that.
No. It's nice watching your kids experience those things for the first time. Like I take my kids skiing and it's nice seeing them see the things that you once got excited about.
Yeah.
Doing these things. I've just, on the subject of kids' holidays, at the time of recording, half term's coming up in February.
Yes, is it? Yeah, it is,
well,
isn't it?
In the distant
future.
Well,
no, it's not far, yeah.
But I am, and I thought, I looked around, there's some quite cheap flights. And I said, why don't we go to Italy as a family? Well, that's quite nice. So I said to the kids that go to Italy, they're going, we've always wanted to go to Italy. That sounds amazing. So I went to book the flights on Ryanair. Then I found out that they, once you've got the price, that you have to pay. If you've got kids with you, you have to pay for some seats. Like you have to reserve the seats.
Yeah.
I got so angry, I closed down the window to Ryanair and booked them into Butlins in Skegness instead. So they went to school, they were going to Italy, came back and they're off to Butlins. So they're still excited about that because I played heavily on the swimming pool. They like a swimming pool sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
But,
you can serve them pasta while they're at Skegness, that's all right. Make it feel Italian.
Exactly. Well, there's a buffet sort of thing. So I don't know. I've not been to Butlins since I was a kid, so I'm not sure what it's going to be like. We're off topic here.
Yeah.
You grew up in Stevenage. What were your early experiences of pubs?
Early experiences of pubs. My dad is loves a pub and was a pub sport champion. So he was captain of a darts team when he was younger, captain of a snooker team.
Oh, so all of them. He's like a
all rounder.
Basically any sport that involves no athleticism at all. And actually in the last, it's sort of post lockdown, he's got really into croquet. Anything that's about sort of like judging space and distance and the weight of throw or hit.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of that. It was, if we were to go to a pub, it was always play a bit of pool stuff like that with my dad, and I really enjoyed that. There was, without any political allegiances, the one we would go to locally was actually a conservative club. There was a con club, you know, the conservative club. My dad's not really a Tory, but that just happened to be where we went. And, you know, for a good sort of 15 years of my life, I knew the con club as being the pub we would go to.
Yeah.
Without understanding the political connotations of that, you know, I'm fueling David Cameron's rise to the top of the country.
I go to birthday parties at a conservative club when I grew up, and a working men's club. So I was across the political spectrum as a child.
Yeah.
But it was only later I thought, hang on, that was it.
Yeah, I don't even think my parents are fairly apolitical.
Yeah.
I don't think they were thinking about the political connotation of it being a conservative club. There just wasn't. Like, I'm sure if there was a nicely furnished Labour club or social club, we'd have gone to that instead. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, so that was what sort of growing up. And then as a teenager, we were sort of fortunate. I say Stevenage, I spent a lot of my time growing up in the sort of smaller towns just outside of Stevenage, but it's just no one knows what they're called, so it's just easier to say Stevenage.
Do you want to try it? See if we do?
Sure. Olsey?
No.
Langford?
No.
Shefford?
No.
Yeah, Stevenage.
Yep.
There you go. Who knew that Stevenage had so many satellite towns?
Yeah, it's straight, as a satellite town itself, you know, it's a real part of the London galaxy.
Yeah.
Right? So we were fortunate. I think in smaller towns like that, you do get pubs that will serve you when you're 16.
Yeah.
But they are not. The funny thing is, they're not catered to teenagers. Do you know what I mean? It's strangely the old man pubs that will serve you more so, whereas the pubs that cater to 20 and 30 year olds that have sport and stuff going on, they won't serve you because 20 and 30 year olds will complain about 16 year olds getting in the way, as I would now. I was fortunate enough as a teenager that I could spend, like when I was like 16, 17, I did more pub quizzes than I would now, you know? I spent a lot of time in pubs at that age. And so, I do think of pubs as being a big part of growing up, and very much I would do anything in a pub rather than anywhere else. Like I'd rather work in a pub than a cafe.
Yeah.
If I've got my laptop and I've got some writing to do, I'll go to a pub.
I thought you meant as a little
that as well
job.
That as well. Happiest working days of my life, I think, were working behind bars. Must have worked behind at least 10, 15 different bars.
Oh, really?
Worked in loads of bars.
Pro.
Yeah, I did. Not just pubs either. The best one I did, I worked at the, I don't know if you know, the sports cafe in Piccadilly or Haymarket. I worked there in the summer of 2012 while the Olympics were on.
Oh. Yeah.
And that bar was actually the base for a few Olympic teams. The Slovakian ski team were based there and stuff like that. Very good fun.
Your dad's Olympic pub team was based there?
He could have been. He was good. I do base myself around pubs. I love pubs. I do a bit of work in them. I'd rather eat at a pub than most restaurants nowadays.
Yeah.
And any night out that I can get with two young kids is pubs, absolutely.
Yeah. Do your kids enjoy a pub? I mean, are they young?
Yeah, they do. I'm actually quite ashamed of how much they do. I think when other parents hear the way my children talk about pubs, they sort of judge me and my missus. Yeah. Like, genuinely, I was in a park a couple of weeks ago and it was a bit cold and my daughter was like, can we go to the pub now? Looking around at the other parents like, for a juice, don't worry. She's not addicted yet. they're good pub kids, my kids. I think we got them in pubs very early.
That's the key.
Absolutely. I've got an interesting sort of parallel parenting situation in the sense that my best friends, so like my best mate and my missus' best mate, they're married and they've got kids exactly the same age as us. And their boy, my nephew, he's not a pub kid. I kind of spot that it's a chicken and it's almost like a vicious circle.
Yeah.
The more that they... Because he's shown an aversion to pubs, it sounds dreadful, like I'm trying to train kids to enjoy pubs. But it's like
they've got to learn.
They have got to, exactly that. You've got to make it fun for them. Do you know what I mean? You can't just sit them with a drink and have a chat. Yeah. You have to bring books and toys and play games and do all that kind of thing. But yeah, my kids are quite into it. Whereas, as I say, my mate's kid, he literally just runs for the exit door as soon as he gets in. He hates it. But yeah, mine are good. We do... Like I was explaining off mic that we had a kids sort of soft play Saturday, 2 hours in their birthday party, one of my daughter's friends, and she very much accepted that after that it's our soft play, which was the Grafton Arms around the corner in Kentish Town. Very nice pub, very nice lager on tap. I took a photo of it so I can tell you the name of it. Really, really good lager that I'd never had before. It was called... a Hawkstone premium lager. Do you know whose lager that is?
Nope.
Jeremy Clarkson.
Is it?
Oh.
Yes. But it was good.
Bad man, good lager.
Yeah.
Really good lager, man.
So good?
It should be actually.
It should
bad
be.
Man, good lager. Fantastic lager at Hawkstone. So my kids understand it. They enjoy it. We try and make sure they enjoy the pubs as well.
Have you established what soft plays in your area serve alcohol? Because some of them do.
No, we I don't think we have one. There's talk of one around Finsbury Park that might. Near where I grew up, actually, in Hitchin, I think the pub is called The Angel.
Yeah.
Actual pub with an actual soft play in the back.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Really
unbelievable.
Good.
And it's the only thing that tempts me into moving back, I have to say. More so than being closer to my parents is that pub with that soft play. It's an amazing thing. But no, there are a few pubs near us that have got good like parks and stuff out like next door or pub gardens and stuff, but haven't managed to get a soft play that serves alcohol yet. That's the dream.
My local pub has got an outdoor like climbing frame and slide and all that sort of thing, and it makes it so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the summer.
Yeah.
Because even the winter, the kids just go, can we go outside? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's one near us that's basically got a park next to it.
Oh, okay.
And they're pretty chill about you getting a pint and just walking into the park with it,
with
the glass. So that's perfect.
Wonderful stuff. Well, look, we're going to get on to designing your dream pub.
Sure.
First of all, Dan, would you like to explain your bell?
Yeah, this is the Moon Underwater bell.
Lovely.
And
very gentle this
week. If that goes off, it means one of your choices is materialising slowly in front of us.
Oh!
So, and then you can do what you like with that. You can take it home and enjoy it at your leisure. You can leave it here. You can drink it here.
Fantastic.
There's no pressure. It's all up to you.
It's a judgment-free zone.
Yeah.
I have to say, I'm briefly running through the rest of my day to decide whether I can drink it. I think I can. That's great.
Brilliant.
Great stuff. Okay, well, that's wonderful. Let's hope the bell produces us something good.
Yes.
Jacob, you get two draft choices
in
your pub.
Yeah.
What's choice number one?
So I will start with Stella Artois, which I'm sure you must have had millions of times before, but I'm sorry.
A few times, not loads.
I'm a lager man. I prefer lager to mostly, and I like continental lagers, like kind of European, like sort of Western Europe. This is obviously Belgium, but for me, Stella growing up was the premium lager.
Yeah,
you know, if you're in a pub or even buying tinnies from the offie, you got your Cronenbergs. And I should say, I've got the number 1664 tattooed on my leg due to my love of Cronenberg.
Have you? Really?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's done at a house party with a needle.
Did you plan it before you went to the house party?
Absolutely
or?
Not. No, and brilliant. Regretted it a lot the next day. But I did at the time, loved Cronenberg, drank it too much. A bit sweet, Cronenberg. I don't know if you find that. It's a little bit sweet on the tongue.
You should put that now underneath.
Bit sweet for me nowadays, but what a time. Stella, Stella, for me, I still think of as the premium lager. And I think nowadays it's kind of been trumped. I think in the last sort of 10, 15 years, I think a lot of other brands have come for that, for the throne. You know, Peroni, I think for a long time, was the more expensive premium continental lager.
Yeah.
Then Moretti came in.
Yeah.
Then obviously Madri was a thing. But then that sort of became a meme, didn't it?
People,
that became a joke if you drank Madri. And now Cruz Campo has arrived.
Yeah, that's the new king.
The more expensive kind of continental lager. But for me, I stick with Stella. Stella's like, I find it so drinkable. The Chalice is wonderful.
Yeah.
I love the Chalice, man. I know it's marketing, but I love that.
Nice, isn't it?
I like that.
Do you want
the top? Yeah. It's very rare that anyone does have the little tool. I don't know what you'd call that. It's almost a spoon that they use.
The froth spoon that they sort of flick it off.
Fantastic.
Do you want to hear the pouring ritual?
Please.
In full. It has 9 steps.
Wow.
The purification, the sacrifice, the liquid alchemy, the crown, the removal, the skimming, the judgment, the cleansing and the bestowal.
Wow.
There's a video where a nice lady does all of that and explains
very religious,
it.
Isn't it? There's a lot of the sacrifice, the bestowal. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. But it reminds me of Christmas time. My dad would buy bottles.
Yeah.
Because it was fancy, you know, like the rest of the year, it was tins of Cronenberg that he'd keep in the garage and bring in. But then at Christmas time, it'd be bottles of Stella. And my uncle, who I don't know how to say it, he's a thug, basically. Uncle Carl. Whatever you're picturing in your mind, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Bald head, white van, sovereign ring.
Yeah.
And I remember one Christmas, you know, when you're sort of 13, 14, you'd be allowed a little taste of beer or whatever, or a tiny little drip in a glass. And I remember him going, "Have a bit of Stella, Jake." And I remember him saying to me, going, "It's better than the muck that your dad drinks." And dad must have had Cronenberg. And I remember him saying to me, "I drink that because it stops me getting violent." And I said, "Right." And he goes, "Yeah, it's because it's got less chemicals in it. It's only 4 ingredients, so I don't get violent." And I remember that sticking in my head until the next Christmas, where he'd moved on to John Smith's.
Right.
And I remember even at that age thinking to myself, well, he must have got violent. Like, he must have gone to the pub and done something.
Yeah.
Because they've gone to something that has even fewer ingredients.
And I like that he's picked the drink most associated with violence.
Yeah. I mean, there are horrendous connotations to drinking Stella, which I obviously don't condone. And you know, my uncle is a much quieter, older man now. He's moved on to water, actually. I think they found it was the personality of him.
Yeah,
rather than the
that's
chemicals.
Got less ingredients.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it goes fewer ingredients and less trouble at the weekends. But no, Stella, I really like Stella. And versatile drink for me. I think I quite like a lager tops in the summer. And I think Stella makes a nice lager tops. It's one of the ones as well that I'm not... I think a lot of people are culturally against craft beer. You know, I think a lot of people sort of associate craft beer with a sort of East London hipster, Herne Hill as well. You know, and it's just, and I don't mind that so much. It's just too flavoursome for me a lot of the time. I mean, I will, you know, I will say I've got another something else on my draft list that is more of that. But some a lot of the sort of crafter beers and even lagers sometimes that are too flavoursome, I can taste myself getting a hangover because there's so much sugar in them. You know, I like a Beavertown or something like that, but they're so sweet. You can taste there's so much sugar in it. And I'm sure that the reason I feel rotten the next day, it's obviously the alcohol content, which is usually higher, but it's also the fact it's just got so much sugar to get those flavours in it. And I don't really drink beer for the... I think it's supposed to be quite clean and sort of crisp and cold and just that's what you taste, less than, you know, grape juice or whatever is in a lot of these drinks. So, yeah.
There's definitely times you want that refreshing, just lager, pure sort of...
You can't beat a hot taste. Hot day.
Yeah.
Hot day, cold Stella.
Yeah.
You can't top that.
I'm glad you still like it because I had a look. Robbie, you mentioned to me earlier that I like reviews. I had a look at some reviews on Tesco for Stella.
Yeah, good.
And there's a lot of complaints that over the years the alcohol percentage has been lowered from 5.2 to 4.6.
It has, yeah.
Yeah. And literally, of 70-odd reviews, over half come from the point in 2021 when it went down to 4.6. And it's variously described as swamp juice, pond water, dish water, sweet fizzy water, water, weasel pee, and worse than Foster's.
Weasel pee.
And then there's three quick reviews. Shame on you, Stella Artois. I used to love this drink. 5.2 to 4.6 equals no taste. Never again, in caps. God help us all from the nanny state.
State's fault. But that's it. This is the thing. The men that will be writing these reviews will be men like my uncle, right? Who, you could give them a Stella that's 5.2 and one that's 4.6. They would have no idea. Absolutely no idea. But they think Stella's gone woke, basically.
Yeah.
Nanny state. This is probably them not in Brussels telling us we can't have 4.6. Yeah. It's like they're the ones who are making it for you, mate. It's kind of telling me what to do. You can't taste the difference between a 4.6 beer and a 5.2. Obviously, it has an effect on the flavour a little bit, the alcohol content, but no one can tell.
I didn't even know it had changed. I always remember it being 5.2. Didn't know it had gone down, and I've drunk it recently and not noticed.
It is that kind of culture war thing of like, they're coming for us. They're trying to stop us doing what we want to do.
There was that real feel of that. I'll just give you a couple more because it's worth it, I think. The second one was, I had a massive row with my missus. She was going on about me forgetting a birthday or something. Bought these Stellas and went round a mate's house and we had a great night.
I mean,
doesn't even know why she was angry and thinks she's forgotten his birthday is a real insight.
It's a bit of artwork, actually. There's a whole story there in the two and a half lines, isn't
it? It feels like one of those sort of short story competitions where it's like try and write a tragedy in 19
words.
The context of this within a review for Stella on the Tesco website is maybe the most heartbreaking bit of it all.
Then my favourite was this wouldn't fit up my bum. Crying emoji. I'm now very sore and unable to walk.
Wow,
very strange.
A thorough review there. Yeah. So not tempted to get a Stella tattoo to match your Cronenberg one.
I mean, I haven't got any tattoos in a very long time. I think I did a thing that many young men do when they're in their early 20s. I got my first tattoo after a breakup.
Right.
It was a kind of, this will show her.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
Yeah.
What was it of?
Her
face.
A letter begging her to come back. Yeah. No, well, I'm trying to remember what the first one would have been, actually. The first one, oh God, I can't promise myself I would stop telling this story. First one, I got the word sail away tattooed across my toes. So S-A-I-L on one foot, away on the other. And that was because I was...
You're an Enya fan.
I've done an hour of stand-up that's kind of inspired by this. And that was one of the gags.
Yeah.
I went to Falaraki on a lad's holiday when I was 18 years old. Met a Slovakian waitress. Fell for her hard enough that went back to Stevenage, booked another flight back out there, spent the summer there to be with her. long story where I found out she was also seeing a guy that I was working with whilst I was out there. And in the meantime, I'd got Sail Away tattooed on my toes based on the quickly offered and quickly removed offer of going to Slovakia and living on her dad's boat. So yeah, Stella for me.
you just come with better stories. You need another. Have you got? Is there anything else that happened in 1664 that you can claim it's to do with?
Well, the 1664, the Cronenberg one. That wasn't women related.
I'm just thinking you can make it more highbrow.
Yeah, I don't know.
Google. That's when the English sent a fleet to seize New Netherlands, which remember that fact. So that's when New Netherlands became New York. So maybe it could be. Celebration of that.
Well, I'm trying to remember if that's. I'm just trying to think if, like, socially that's a good thing. Was there anything kind of colonial about that? Is that bad to celebrate us doing that?
Probably. We'll do a bit more research.
I'm just trying to think. It's quite often not a good thing when the British travel around the world taking countries. I'm just wondering if I claim that's the tattoo I've got on my leg, if that's a bit more Uncle Carl than I'd like it to be.
Well, choose your audience.
That's true.
If someone's going how much they hate Cronenberg, okay, because they want Stella, because it's your Uncle Carl. Uncle Carl might like that. True. What's your second choice on draft?
Second choice is the Parker IPA by Double Barrel Brewery. It's a very specific drink. It is an IPA. It's a really nice IPA. And I discovered it because, as we mentioned earlier, I want to continue drinking as I did before I had children whilst looking after my children. And one of the ways that me and my girlfriend have found, one of the ways that we found we can have a bit of a day out whilst having a drink and the kids having a really good time is as if we're sort of tourists that have never been to the city before. We go down to London Bridge, then walk down to the South Bank, go across there through the BFI, through sort of South Bank and do all the sort of, there's a lot of rides on there and stuff. And then around South Bank, just outside the National, it's called
the National Theatre.
Just outside the National Theatre, they do have this kind of place you can buy takeaway beers. And that's where we found this, the Parker. And there's a lot of kind of Hepcat is on tap there, you know, the South London Brewery, which is good.
I'm a fan of Hepcat.
Yeah. I like Hepcat, but it's just a bit too flavourful for me. You know, it's a bit too much kind of grapefruit, peach, apricot, all that stuff. Yeah. Whereas the Parker I found to be just a little bit more subtle on the tongue, much more drinkable. And I loved it so much that I think I'm getting married, not this summer, the one after, and we're going to buy a barrel of it. Brilliant. So that it can be served at our wedding.
Because
we've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and you can do the maths of when she was pregnant after, you know, the fact that my daughter was 18 months old when she got pregnant with our son. And so there just hasn't been much time for date time in the last 4 years, you know, with a lockdown thrown in as well. There haven't been many meals out. There's not been many evenings together, especially because I work in the evenings.
Yeah.
So those days with the kids are as good as it gets in terms of us having time together. And that drink is very much a kind of... It's like for most people, they're kind of like, you know, night out date with the missus drink would be a nice Merlot or a Rioja that they enjoy in a restaurant. Yeah. Whereas mine is an IPA drank from a plastic cup stood next to the South Bank.
Well, that bar is where I had my first draft pint post COVID lockdown.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was walking back. I had to go and pick up something in London. It was the time where you still couldn't go in pubs.
Yeah.
But you were allowed to go places.
Would that have been in the summer? Would that have been around the kind of April, May time that they were doing that?
Yeah, when it first opened. Yeah, when it first everything started opening up after the first lockdown. And I had to get something. I was walking back, saw that there. I had my first pint of draft. It was one of the nicest pints I've had. I sat on a little bench for a bit, having not had a draft pint of beer for ages.
It was a really underrated time. I remember the first day that you were allowed to do that, going to my local pub near me and being able to drink outside with people on a bench. Unreal, man. But and we would have done a lot of that around that time. My partner would have been pregnant with my daughter, so we would have been going down there. I would have been having a pint of Double Barrel Parker IPA, and she would have been having some kind of orange juice or whatever. But yeah, fantastic.
I'm not sure I've had Parker. I think I would have had Hepcat then.
Yes.
But Double Barrel, great brewery.
Reading, isn't it? It's based in Reading. Because I've sort of contacted them and been like, can I get... a barrel. Yeah. And they're like, well, we usually just do it in, you know, we sort of sell to the trade or whatever. And I sort of explained the story and they were like, well, yeah, you'd have to come and get it. And I perform in Reading regularly enough. Yeah, yeah. So near the time
two
of the wedding.
Two birds with one stone.
Well, yeah, literally that, man. I'll go, you know, and I suspect I'll probably spend most of the fee that I'll get for performing on this singular barrel of beer and then drive it very slowly back to London where it'll weigh down my car. But yeah, it's a really, really nice IPA. It's kind of, it's not one of the cloudier ones, but it's a little bit cloudy, really nice flavour, served cold, but not lager cold, you know. And I should say, I've only ever drunk it at that bar, so I've only ever had it out of a plastic cup. So if you can enjoy a beer that much in plastic, I mean, I'm so excited for what it's going to taste like at the wedding in a glass. It'll be my first time trying. Might hate it. That might ruin it. It might have been the plastic that was making the flavour work. But no, I'm quite specific with my IPAs. I don't dislike the IPA culture, but there are a lot of them that are a bit too strong on the tongue for me, and the Parker is perfect. Very nice beer.
Fabulous.
Well, it's nice you've got a romantic story to it, because it's a husband and wife team that invented it. Mike and Lucy Clayton Jones. That's why it's double barreled, because it's for the Clayton Jones. They got married and then thought, we want to make beer. So they went off. They said they went off on a year-long beer adventure backpacking over 84,000 miles across the world to find inspiration and ingredients and trends and stuff, and then came back and started their own brewery from their garage.
Amazing.
And it's built up from there. So it's nice. It's got a little echo there. It's a romantic story for you, but is for the brewery itself.
A beer based on love.
Yeah.
That will sit on draft alongside Stella.
Yeah, exactly. But you've got a cater to all tastes.
Exactly. You've got Uncle Carl on one side and my fiance on the other side of the bar. Perfect. And they'll keep them separated from their lager.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Well, that's not all you get in your pub, because you get two bottles or cans as well. What's your first choice of those?
Well, you'll have to forgive me, because I have to read it, because I'm not even sure. Beer Deluxe. Ooh. Beer Deluxe. Fantastic.
What's that materialising in front of us?
Now, carry on talking. This is going to take me
a
minute.
So, Beer Deluxe. And I have to say, I had to Google the name of it, because I've never called it by its name. This is a small, yes, stubby.
Yeah. So, I thought you have... Jesus. Drop one.
That's fine.
You have to bring the whole box, but I've got some... I've got some that are cold.
Oh, mate. Oh, look at that. And if you've got a bottle opener, I really will.
I have got a bottle
because so these are the Asda ones. Basically, every supermarket does these. Every supermarket has got these. All of us have been to a barbecue at some point where they've had these. And
it's that bit.
It's clearly not a good lager, I'm sure. I'm sure if you were to look into it too much, it's not great. I think And I'll make the... Sorry, gentlemen, I've opened mine before yours. There you go.
No, you're the guest.
This is, I believe... And by the way, I think it's 25 centilitres. It's not that much smaller than a standard bottle of beer.
No.
But it's just so fun. Stubby.
Yeah.
How much fun is that? Look at that.
It fit in your hand, don't you? I've got tiny hands.
And the wonderful thing is, right, we all lie to ourselves that we like pints, right? We're lying to ourselves. The reality is, it maybe not with your first one, if you gasp and you get through it quite quickly. When you're drinking lager that is supposed to be cold and supposed to be fizzy, by the time you've got to sort of 70% through, it's warm, it's flat.
Yeah.
These things, four gulps, it's gone, and you're opening another one that's cold and fizzy.
I think if we had table service in bars, we wouldn't be drinking pints. I think it's because you don't want to have to go to the bar that we have pints in this country so much. I think when you go abroad and you've got people coming bring you beers, it's the little ones are perfect.
They're perfect, man.
These remind me of when I was at uni sort of age. I went to uni in Norwich and we would go on the Norfolk Broads on boats and we would just go to the supermarket, buy case after case of these and just drink these on the roof of the boat.
It's outdoor drinking, isn't it? It's real. Like I have to say, actually, I'm looking up, looking at a ceiling. I don't know if I've ever drunk one of these beers with a ceiling above my head before.
No.
I think I've always drunk one of these and looked up and seen the sky. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Thank you very much for my beer deluxe.
This feels like the sort of beer of watching a World Cup round at a family member's house.
Yeah.
Feels like they'll get these out of the fridge.
Lovely as well.
That's perfectly drinkable.
Mate, when you're reading a label that says selected for Asda French style lager, you're not expecting much.
Yeah.
That's honestly, man, they're so good. And it's funny because, as I say, I've never called it by name. I've always just said, can I have a stubby, please?
Yeah.
Or my dad has said, would you like a stubby? And it's quite telling that I just sort of had to Google stubby French lager and look through and be like, which label is it? And then, and it's funny because it's like, this is the one that's Asda. And there is an Asda where my parents get their shopping, so that's why it was this one. But it's the quantity for me. That's the real key. As you say, it's actually quite a good lager for a supermarket lager, but it's the quantity that's key. Yeah. This is what we want. We like, you know, toxic masculinity has tricked us into lying to ourselves that we want pints.
Yeah.
No, we want these. And there have been two instances recently where I've learned that. A friend, I'll give a shout out to his bar, actually. A friend of mine who actually does most of my tattoos, sort of, these kind of like thick black ones are all done by the same guy called Matty D'Arienzo. He's an Australian tattoo artist based in East London. He's opened, I mean, this was years ago, he opened a bar called Pamela, which is on Kingsland Road near Dalston. And the first time I went in there, I sort of went in to support Matty, really. And I went, oh yeah, I'll have a pint. And I got given this thing. It was sort of a glass a bit bigger than that. And I'd had a few drinks already. And it took me sort of 5 minutes of looking at it being going, what's wrong with this? What? And so I think I'm saying this correctly. It's because it wasn't a pint. It's what they call in Australia a scooter. Have you heard this?
Or schooner?
Schooner. That'd be it. Yeah. And I was like, what on earth? And I think it's 440. 440 millilitres. I think that's how they drink. And it's better than a pint. Yeah. It doesn't get warm. Doesn't get flat.
Yeah.
More so than that, I've been hinting to my fiance for years. For Christmas, you know what it's like when you're a guy at Christmas. What do you want? Nothing, really.
Yeah.
Right. The one thing I've been saying to her for years, I'd like a pint glass. I'd like a pint glass, a good pint glass that's got the stuff at the bottom that keeps it fizzy, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Never get one. So Boxing Day this year, I thought, bollocks, I'm just going to buy myself one. Went on Amazon, found the Chalice Stella, of course. Bought the wrong size, bought a 330 mini one, and I love it. it's better than a pint. I don't want a pint. All the tins of lager I've got in the fridge are 440 anyway. So I've got, you know, fill up the glass and a little swig before I've been the tin.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And just get another one in 10 minutes. I honestly think you could change Britain's drinking culture if we just started serving schooners in the pubs and made this the norm in terms of
maybe
bottles.
Global warming will bring it about because it will be hotter.
Yeah.
And people will be warm. The pints will be getting warmer. There'll be more. That's right. I'm not saying overall it's good, global warming. I'm just saying we've got to look for the benefits.
Well, and also this might feed global warming because smaller measurements, meaning more of these, more waste, heat the planet up, more need for a cold beer. So as a cycle of events, that might work, actually.
So basically, invest in beer deluxe.
Invest in beer deluxe.
Climate change fans.
If you like warm weather and cold beer and destroying our home, then that's the way to go. Invest in beer deluxe. But lovely lager. I really like that.
Be nice to have in your pub, though, I think. Like, I don't know, you imagine your pub, but if you think, you know, you talked about it's nice to have a park nearby or a garden.
Yeah.
Someone wants to take a drink out, you can say, well, we've got some stubbies.
Fancy
here
a stubby
in the fridge?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's nice.
Maybe an outdoor bar.
Yeah.
You could have these in a fridge.
Yeah, well, or I mean I do quite like a bottle bath. Is that what you call it? A bottle bath? You know, so, outside with the big the big sort of bucket of ice. I've had these out of them.
Yeah.
On me, multiple times.
You could go, it's a tenner. Here's a little ticket. You can take what you want from the bottle
that
bath.
Is very nice. That's great idea. I love that.
Are people allowed, you say it's an outdoor drinking thing. Is it a case where they have to have these outdoors? Are they allowed to bring them into the building, or is it going to be exclusively a garden?
As I said, I've never had one of these inside before. And the fact it's half gone, I am quite enjoying it.
It's all right.
I think let people take them out, but let people have them inside. But I think people would naturally veer outside without realizing. There'd be like flies to a light bulb. You know, they just as soon as this goes in your hand, it's like a magnetic pull to the sunshine or at least to grass underfoot that you'd want that. But yeah, that is the perfect outdoor beer for me. And it's something, again, you mentioned being outdoors on a boat, barbecues. I'm sure when I was younger, there were... You know, when we were sort of young, it was like, right, let's go down the park, play a bit of football and bring some stubbies.
Yeah.
And just, I remember goal hanging whilst holding one of these, actually, trying to get a header at the back post while finishing off a stubby.
Easier than holding a pint.
Goal hanging. You can't play sport with a pint. You can play sport with a beer deluxe. They're fantastic, fantastic beer. Really happy with that. Thank you very much for gifting me them.
You say you can't play sport with a pint. I'm sure your father with his trophies would argue.
This is a problem. You do have to call that sport, don't you? I say that. I was watching the darts a couple of weeks ago, and as in the time of my life, I'm a lifelong Luke Littler fan now. My dad has played a lot of sport with a pint in his hand.
What's accompanying it in the bottle or can section?
Well, I have to apologise again, because again I have to read it, because again I've never actually said it by name. The other bottle I'll be serving is a Soleil des Alpes. This is a rosé wine.
I love a rosé.
Obviously summertime. Although I say that, I think I did end up drinking some on Christmas Day. But I mean, I drank everything on Christmas Day. So this is Soleil des Alpes. I have to confess, I don't know anything about wine. I really don't know anything about wine. My parents drank a lot of wine growing up, but the wine that they would drink growing up, it's astounding they've got to their mid to late 60s and the health that they're in because of what they would drink growing up. Barefoot was as good as it got in our house. Do you know what I mean? It's like spending over a fiver was a good bottle of wine. Mm. So again, it's kind of a nostalgic drink, but I moved into a block of flats a month before lockdown in 2020. Pregnant girlfriend, obviously lockdown kicks in. I was in a hard position where I had my first child was going to be born, a lot of financial responsibility. Lockdown kicks in, all my work's out the window. As a comedian, and I hadn't been self-employed long enough to receive the grants and support, so I was in real trouble. I got lucky that I was making this podcast for the BBC at the time called Jacob Hawley on Drugs, but that was the only thing I had. So it's a tough time, and I was saved very much by the fact that we'd moved into this building, and it's a strange kind of building in Holloway, 200 flats. It's called the Beaux Arts building. It's quite a fancy sort of decor building, but we were all locked down. And there was 200 people in these flats, and we were fortunate that there were sort of two gardens and a roof terrace. And the roof terrace, as we mentioned, great, great weather, that became a pub garden, basically. And there was one guy, a guy called Nick, incredibly posh guy, very, very, well-to-do, clearly from a better background than me. And I just assumed his knowledge on wine was good. And he was sort of like, look, I can get this Soleil des Alpes rosé. And he sort of spoke about it as if it was like illicit. And he was like, I'm getting a good price and it's good stuff. And I must have got through. I was getting through nearly two bottles a day for about 3 weeks. Because there was nothing to do. All I was doing of a morning was recording this podcast, which would take an hour. Then the afternoons and the evenings were mine. The missus was pregnant. She couldn't drink. I was just sitting on this roof, just slowly seeing off this wine. It's a good rosé. Again,
I don't, lovely bottle, isn't it?
It's a beautiful bottle. It sort of looks like. Do you know the fancy? Is it Whispering Angel? Is that what it's called?
Oh, I think I know what you mean.
That's the kind of posh made in Chelsea. They all drink Whispering Angel, and I think it's kind of a knockoff of that. It's supposed to look like that. But it's nice. It's not too sweet. I find a lot of rosés. I don't know about you. I find a lot of rosés. There's a real heavy apricot or peach flavour in it.
Like a dry one.
Yeah, I like a dry one. And if this is fairly dry, lovely cold. But it was just this funny thing that I assumed this guy, Nick, was getting me this really good deal. And we were getting this fancy rosé. How was he getting it? And oh, God, he was only charging us £12 a bottle. This is incredible. What a result. And I was just drinking this stuff as if it was gold. And then a few months later, I was like, I might just buy my own. I Googled it, and it was like readily available from every shop imaginable. It was only like a £12.50 bottle of wine. And I was just getting a 50 pence discount because he was buying boxes of it at the time. But literally, he got this whole building, this whole block of flats where we live. He got us all hooked on it to the point where shipments of it would come in. And you know, our parcels would all be stored at the bottom of this building. And there'd literally just be boxes with like your flat number on it. And you'd just see everyone going down and getting their Soleil des Alpes and then carrying it to the roof bottle by bottle and just drinking it on the roof. But it just, for me, it's a really nice wine. And it just marks... a time where, and I think this is the point of drinking, is that it's something you do communally. And it was at a time when I think I needed communal drinking more than any other point in my life. And this for me is like, I'd have never drunk this if I hadn't met these people. And I don't, you know, I had to text the guy, I hadn't seen him in a year and a half since we moved out of that block of flats. But like, I don't really see any of them that we lived amongst since then. And I don't really think of that as a sad thing. I just think, well, that for
moment
all of us.
Time.
It served its purpose. We all had a great time. We're all friends. And it was just really nice drinking this rosé on top of that building with these people.
It's great when a drink gives you memories of a specific time, isn't it?
Yes.
You can look back to it. And
so many drinks like that for me. Throughout my life, it's almost like the chapters of my life are kind of, if I was ever to write an autobiography, I could just call each chapter a certain drink.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like,
exactly. That's the Malibu years when I was younger. These were the Cronenberg years, with, you know, the Parker IPA wedding years. And it's just more so than many other drinks for me, that really marks out a period of time of drinking this nice rosé on the roof with these people and sort of getting ready for my daughter to be born and you know, the missus having a little taste because she's pregnant. She couldn't really drink a glass of it. And it was just... yeah, really nice time.
What does rosé make you think of, Dan? It's not a trick question, I'm just curious.
Oh, I was just wondering if it was a shared
thing.
There's
no reference.
I really like it, but I just think it's a dangerous drink because, I mean, I think this is one, I went out with some of our mutual friends, I think you couldn't come. And we started off in a wine bar and we had rosé. And then suddenly... by the end of the night, we'd drunk like 7 bottles between 4 of us. Because it doesn't feel like you're drinking alcohol.
It's funny, I've kind of got 2 chapters in my life where rosé were a big thing. The more prominent and the one I'm keener to talk about is that one.
Yeah.
You know, nice times on a roof with adults. Yeah. You know, sort of. And, it, you know, I was surrounded by people that were a little bit older than me in most cases who had children of their own. And it was... I remember being told, you know, when you know you're going to be excited for this, and then this stage, don't be frightened about becoming a dad. It's going to be great. When I was 17, there was also a period of time where there was an off license that we would pass on our way into town, and they would do 2 bottles for a fiver, of rosé for a fiver. I remember just, you know, my group of mates, as we would walk into town for a night out when we were young, would try and see off 2 bottles of wine between like 4 of us that we'd spent, you know,
£1.25
each. But nice. it is a dangerous drink. It's so easily drunk, especially on a warm day. It slips down, like easier than white does, wine. And you almost think of it as an alcopop, don't you?
Yeah.
It's so delicious. But
unfairly maligned, I think.
I think it's becoming more popular.
Yeah.
But there's a tendency of the new roses that are coming out to put appalling labels on them. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of roses marketed to hen party type.
I feel like it goes 2 ways. There's that side, the kind of rosés marketed at hen do's, the kind of, you know, once you've fizzed up on Prosecco, finish your night on this sort of stuff. But then there's also the kind of hipster rosés and the oranges and that. I'll quickly find the name, but we at Christmas time, I sort of did it with my best mate and our friends, and my thing was like, I'll get the food. And he said, right, I'll get the wine. And he spent a bit of money on it, which was obviously very kind of him. But he got it all from this place. And it was things like, do you know like Vino Verde?
I love my favourite wine.
And Dune Juice and that kind of stuff. Do you know that? Dune Juice was the rosé. And La Vie en Orange, Rouge Petard, all these kind of fancy sort of hipster wines.
Yeah.
They all taste a bit cidery to me. That's what I found, a little
I don't know what the word is, a funk to them.
Exactly that. That's what you smack your lips. It's a bit kind of tart on the tongue or something.
Acidic,
like
maybe?
Yeah, maybe acidic. Yeah, I mean, it's probably where we opened them in the morning and didn't finish them until midnight. It's all gone off. But yeah, it is weird with rosé. There's like a fork of, like, it goes one way to try and target Hindus, you know, get your Lamborghini done and then move on to this stuff. Or, as you say, the kind of nicer market, which is a bit sort of hipster and fancy for me. But this one I describe as very nice rosé.
Yeah.
Very nice
lovely.
Rosé.
Lovely stuff.
Okay, phones away. Put a gag on Siri. It's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
Right, you mentioned you did a lot of pub quizzes in your youth. Do you still enjoy a pub quiz to this day?
I haven't done one for many years.
Well, you're about to. Because Dan has a pub quiz for you. Dan, take it away.
Yeah, well, I like to base it on something to do with our guests.
Yes.
I don't know if you know this, Robbie, but Jacob last year, I think it was last year, saved a life.
It was actually quite a few years ago.
Oh, was it quite a few years ago? Sorry.
I understand why you've said that, because I sort of won an award for it last year. Anthony Nolan is a charity that finds...
He's gone quite pink. I wish I hadn't brought this up.
No, sorry, mate.
Just talk about his charity work.
Yeah. Can we get that to Uncle Carl? No. Okay, so I donated my stem cells, which are sort of part of my bone marrow, to a charity called Anthony Nolan. This was in 2016. And I saved, someone who was suffering with cancer in Canada, would you believe, received those stem cells, and it did save her life. And then since then, I sort of do a lot of work with the charity Anthony Nolan, because it's an incredible charity who, their job is to find people like myself who would be up for donating stem cells and potentially saving people's lives. And it's an amazing charity. I won a little award for them last year, the Donor of the Year award, which was, I think, more to do with the sort of outreach stuff that I do to try and... I shouldn't really be going bashful when I talk about it, because that's the point, I should talk about it and let people know. Yeah, so it's an amazing charity, and anyone listening who this sounds of any interest at all, I cannot stress enough how worthwhile you will find it to look into this charity. They can only work with donors who are 30 years old or younger.
Right.
If you're older than that, look into the DKMS, who do very similar work. I can't stress enough how easy it is.
I did done a DKMS one, because is that the one that Al Murray did a lot of
Al does a lot of stuff with them. Yeah. So you sign up to a register, very, very simple to do so. So your blood's taken, you go onto the register. In terms of the process of donating your stem cells, people think that, you know, you donate your bone marrow, they hold you down and get a big drill out. It's absolute rubbish. You go into the nicest hotel I've ever been in on Harley Street. It's nicer than most of the hotels I've been on holiday to. very comfortable, nice staff. You sit down, one line goes in one arm, one goes in the other. And I'm needle phobic and I managed to do it.
Yeah.
They take your blood out, it goes into a machine above your head, spins it around, gets the stem cells out and goes back in the other arm. Takes a couple of hours, very comfortable, and you save someone's life. And that is an amazing thing to be able to say you've done. And it's a very nice thing. And I'd really recommend people look into it, because it's something I stumbled upon by chance when I was a student. There were people from the charity outside the gym at my university saying, do you want to sign up to this thing? And I said, yeah, why not? And in the sort of almost 10 years since that happened, it's been one of the best things I've done. And I'm very proud of it. and I'm very proud to be associated with the charity. They're an amazing charity, and you get to walk around being told you've saved someone's life, which feels pretty good. So
yeah, recommend it, man.
Fantastic.
Fabulous.
Well, I was thinking initially, I thought, well, we could do something on, I found a website which tells you what blood types famous people are. So I thought I could give you a famous person, you could guess their blood type. But I mean, you're literally just guessing. But I also,
you don't know my knowledge of blood types.
Also, yeah, that's also true. But also, it's what slightly put me off was that it tells us things like Elvis Presley and the Gallagher brothers are both type O. Jack Nicholson was type B. And then for type A, it says, I swear to God, it says there's people like Alan Alda, Ringo Starr, Britney Spears. And then it says, and the German politician, Adolf Hitler.
Politician. That's what he's remembered for, yeah, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. The German vegetarian. Yeah.
Failed artist. and comb over wearer.
I don't think I've ever seen that anywhere else. Anyway, wow. So I abandoned that idea and I just thought, well...
In disgust.
Yeah, more of a sort of a sort of classic pub quiz. It's kind of related to that, to medical things. It's I'm going to give you a name of a part of the human body, and you have to tell me where you would find it.
Okay.
So right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to run through these quickly, have a think about them. We'll come back and do the answers in the second half.
So I'll write them down.
That's all right, because I'll remind them.
Okay, yeah, great.
So I don't know these either. Yeah. We're in competition.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay.
And as it's a quick one, we've got six. Okay. So, number one, the philtrum, P-H-I-L-T-R-U-M, the philtrum. Number two, lingual frenulum. Sorry if I'm not pronouncing these right. Mm. I almost definitely am not. Number three, digitus pedis primus. Number four, the lunula or lunula. Number five, the uvula. And number six, the anatomical snuff box.
Wow.
Okay.
Fabulous-ish quiz, yeah. Dan. We'll find out whether it's fabulous or not. But
yeah, see how you do.
And you can find that out in the second half of The Moon Underwater, because it is time for those of you who do not support The Moon Underwater on Patreon to leave us. If you don't subscribe, you head to moonunderpod.com and sign up to get ad-free extended episodes a day early, a monthly bonus podcast, and access to The Moon Underwater Social Club on Facebook. We'll see you soon in part two. We'll continue to create Jacob's dream pub.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.